Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosevall, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today is Prashant Sothakal, Founder and Managing Director at BBP Institute, a boutique enterprise data analytics firm based in Calgary, Canada. Prashant has mechanical engineering and IT degrees from two national institutes in India, master's degrees from both Cornell and Northwestern universities in the United States, and a PhD in philosophy from the University of Commerce in Lille, France. When he's not working on BBP clients, he's an adjunct professor at IE Business School in Madrid and serves as an executive data analytics advisor in several companies. Welcome, Prashant. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're such an expert in this, and data analytics is such a hot spot for the CFO and for finance in general. It's always great to learn from you and hear what you have to say. And we'll kind of pick it up from where you ended last fall at the Finex talk. Your Finex talk was on data management, and it was on a new frontier. But you kind of shocked us all when you explained that data is a liability. But what I want to focus on is you also mentioned three attributes that must exist to make data an asset. And can you kick things off in this feature talk by reviewing what those attributes are?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steve. Yes. That was a kind of a shocker when I said data is a liability. You know, the default state of data, I believe, is actually is a liability. So companies have to work hard to transform the data from a liability to an asset. So before I go to your first part of the question, or the main question, how to make it an asset, let me rephrase again what I meant by data is a liability. The default state, when I say data is a liability, it occurs because of three main situations. The first one is about volume. Today, we are capturing tremendous amount of data everywhere, so at a rate which is unprecedented. So what does it happen? It results in complexity. So we have seen many cases where autonomous vehicles, especially in the mining industry, have resulted in a lot of accidents. And because of that, companies are not able to figure out where the root cause of this problem is. So too much of data is also harmful in some cases if you are not able to manage it well. Next, number two is about cost of data management. We have been talking about cloud computing, outsourcing, this thing, that thing, all those things to reduce the cost of data management. But still, on an average, the IT expenses, IT budgets in almost every company is going up at a rate of 5% every year. Why? Because of the cost of data management, storage, processing, so on and so forth. The third one is about ESG, which is related to data management as well. Forrester did a study, and they say that 73% of the data in a company is unused. IBM did a similar study, and they said that 90% of the data in a company is unused. So what does this mean? This dark data is creating a lot of carbon footprint. So today we talk about biggest polluters of the industry as oil and gas companies, transportation, so on and so forth. But not many people know that data centers are also a huge polluting entities. So the more data you have, you are more polluting the environment. And at the same time, the hackers don't come to companies which have less data. They put their hands on companies which have a huge data set. Like, for example, in Capital One, when Equifax and all those companies ran into problems, it's because the hackers went to those companies because of large data. And finally, privacy. So if you're not able to manage the privacy aspect well, you will again run into trouble. Cambridge Analytica came into limelight because of data and analytics, and it was the same data and analytics which resulted in their collapse. So what I'm saying is data is a liability if you just store and keep it. You need to transform it. Just keeping and storing data doesn't make you data-driven. You need to work hard to transform the data into an asset. So that comes back to your other question, or the main question, what can you do to make data into an asset? The first thing is tied to the purpose. Capture data only if you need it for business. Say what? What is that purpose? Basically, in my view, three things. Data is required for a business for three main reasons. Number one, operations. Number two, compliance. And third one is decision making. So if you're not able to associate the data capture to one of these three things and just say that, oh, I'm going to capture it because don't worry about cost. Cloud is cheap. Somebody has told me data is the new oil, data is blood and all this thing. You don't have a real business case. So align it to the purpose. The second thing is about focus on transactions. So if you just have 500,000 customer records and you're not able to create orders from those customer records, then you are not going very far with your data. So focus on transactions. So transactions are basically the linchpin of data analytics. So if you're able to focus on transactions because you are focusing on compliance, relationship, money, all of those things are associated with transactions. And lastly, improve the data literacy in the organization. If people are not literate about using data, they go back to the other side. What is that other side? Intuition, tribal knowledge. So if the data literacy in the organization is very low, then you will have potentially data as a liability. So these are the three main strategies which I would tell my clients to transform the data into an asset. How I do it, it's a different discussion. These are the three big directions which I tell my clients.
Well, and I, you know, the whole point of, I guess, our talks in the past have been to create data literacy within, you know, our community at CFO.University. I know you do that broadly with supply chain companies, with all kinds of different constituents. But really, the literacy part is a huge place of where you fit in to the CFO suite and CFO.University community. So we really appreciate that. You know, you had, you know, we talk about insights and how important insights and influence are in decision-making. And, you know, what are insights when it comes to data and analytics?
In terms of data and analytics, it's that unknown factor. If I had known today, would have helped me make a better decision? Like, for example, I moved from India to Calgary in 2009. If somebody had told me, hey, Prashant, don't buy a house in Calgary, instead buy it in Vancouver, British Columbia, I would have been a millionaire by now. But I didn't have that insight at that point in time, and nobody provided me that insight to buy a property in Vancouver. So it is that unknown element which is actually affecting us making a better decision. Like in the terms of data analytics, it could be correlations, predictions, outliers, inferences, variation, averages, so on and so forth. If I had known, now would help me make a better decision. So this is what I call it as an insight. So the data analytics from a theoretical or a technical perspective, we call them as hindsight, which is associated with descriptive analytics, nearsight, which is about the current situation, and foresight, which is associated with predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics. So it's all about the taxonomy, about how do you want to classify analytics. But overall, insight is that unknown element, if I know today, would help me make a better decision.
For a little bit of a curveball here, but so how to get that, you know, ask the right questions, that what I call the intuition, creating, you know, moving between intuition or heuristic into the algorithmic or the more known analytics part, you know, is there ways to teach people that, or is it kind of has to come with their backgrounds and education and experience?
Well, that's a great question, Steve. So when I look at holistic insights, I believe it has to be a combination of both. It has to be your intuition or your domain experience plus data and analytics. Relying on one of this alone or completely is going to be really detrimental. What I tell people is I believe in a concept called citizen data scientist. What does that fundamentally mean? That means people who are closer to business and data are the ones who are able to get complete more value out of data and analytics. So don't throw away your domain experience. We need that because all said and done, data analytics has got four major components: data, algorithms, assumptions, which many people miss at, and last one is about ethics. So for assumptions and ethics, your domain experience really matters. If you're just focusing on data and algorithms, it's an incomplete situation. You need to focus on the other two building blocks of data analytics as well to come up with holistic insights. I'll give you a small example of what Walmart did during the time of Hurricane Warnings. So during the time of Hurricane Warnings, we have a general intuition or scientific knowledge says that people buy essential items like milk, water, eggs, and so on. But Walmart did data analytics and found that along with milk, water, eggs, people are also buying strawberry Pop-Tarts. This might look very counterintuitive. Why would somebody buy strawberry Pop-Tarts during a hurricane warning? But all said and done, data is saying the story. So now what Walmart and other grocery chains are doing is during the time of hurricane warning, they're also stocking their shelves with the desert strawberry Pop-Tarts as well. So if you had just relied on data, you would have missed a huge portion of your revenue, but people are buying the strawberry Pop-Tarts as well. So this is where I think you need to bring your intuition, which is your domain experience, and data analytics together to derive holistic insights.
Yes, I'm trying to think the heuristic part of that comes in when, hey, I need to analyze the data around different events. So in Walmart's case, during a hurricane, during a snowstorm, during a, you know, and what happens to people's buying behavior. So then you say, okay, now I know what I want to look for. And then it's a matter of grabbing the data and looking at that and finding the insights from the data. So I think it makes a lot of sense the way you explain there is a piece of our intellectual prowess that needs to be applied to that to be able to ask those, and you always call it ask the right question. You know, there's no data analytics without, you know, a question to be answered. And I think that's an important aspect of this whole thing is the human side and the technology side need to get merged. And that's where I think it's really exciting.
So you just said about events. I call it as transactions because the events are basically the acid test. That's where rubber hits the road. Not having a 500,000 customer masters in your database where you are doing business just with 15,000 of them. So what's the point in having 500,000 and doing analytics on those 500,000 when your real revenue is coming from this 15,000 customers?
Well, that's the dark data you're talking about, isn't it? That's an example of the dark data. So you only need whatever it was, 5% or 8% of that amount, and you can get rid of all the rest of the data. That's great. You know, you talk about actionable insights and how do we achieve them? Can you go into that a little bit for us?
Just a few seconds back, I mentioned about the three types of insights: hindsight, nearsight, and foresight. That's from a technical perspective. But in reality, in my view, there are two types of insights from a value generation perspective. One is performance insights, and next, number two, actionable insights. So what is this performance insights? Performance insights just give us the information about knowing something. I want to know, who are my top five vendors? I want to know what is my monthly recurring revenue. Good. So you want to know about all those insights. Good. But the next step is transforming those performance insights into actionable insights. That's where the real value is. So how do you make sure that the performance insights, which is just about knowing, is converted into actionable insights? So what is required to make it actionable insights? Number one, you need to make a decision. That's where decision comes into the picture. If I say that, okay, I have classified all my SKUs in my store into four levels, A, B, C, and D, and D class items are catching dust, I need to terminate the contract with the vendors. Okay, you got this insight. There are 12 D class items in your inventory. Now the next thing is, how do you transform this insight into actionable? One of the things is terminate the contract. Oh my gosh, I can't do this. What do we need? Apart from making a decision, you need resources because you need to pay the penalty and so on and so forth. And the last one is what you need is about the consequences, ability to handle those consequences. So when you talk about actionable insights, I've seen that it has become more like a jargon or a buzzword these days. It's about three things. It's about decision-making, business resources, and ability to take the repercussions. In other words, in simple words, I say it's all about leadership.
That's a great way to put it because, you think about, actionable insights. We can get, and finance people, we have been, millennial, for 500 years, we've been good at finding the performance-based management side, right? We've been good at reporting how we did. And now we're having the opportunity with analytics and kind of this forward-looking piece, having a real impact on performance. But you just can't report what happened last year or last month or last week. You have to be able to say, what's the next step? And I think that's the beauty of kind of the way you teach is you keep it simple and, have to make decisions. What's a decision we should make on this? You know, what's action we have to take? And you give some great examples. So really appreciate that because I think it's a real stepping stone to success in the CFO suite is that forward-looking, forecasting, call it predictive analytics piece that will help us make better companies where we work. So that's great.
Descriptive analytics, the great thing about descriptive analytics, which is on historical performance, it is that it helps to build the right level of communication and literacy in the organization. But the real value is on the future. So what is the point if I give you a beautiful dashboard about what happened in, what was the weather in Toronto in 2016? I can't do much about it. But instead, even if I write something on a post-it and I say, but there is high this weekend in Toronto is going to be 25 degrees with 60% accuracy. That's going to be more valuable to you because you can plan for the future. So that's a value that you can do something about it. Whereas descriptive analytics, there is very little you can do about it. So many companies are not focused really on predictive analytics. They are still stuck in descriptive analytics. And to be fair to them, one of the reasons why they are struggling is poor data quality.
I think Calgary won out by not having predictive analytics on housing prices in Vancouver when you moved back in 2009. If you moved to Vancouver, maybe Vancouver would be better off, but Calgary would be worse off. So that's interesting. Hey, you know, you mentioned that there's three key elements for actionable insights. Could you just remind us what those are again, just so we make sure we write those down?
So it's about the decision, the commitment to consume resources. That means you might have a great decision, but if you don't have those resources, whether it's money, labor, or even data is also a resource. And the last one is about the business impact. What are the consequences? And can you manage those risk or impact of those consequences as well? So these three elements are to be taken care of when you talk about actionable insights.
Yeah, I like the third one particularly because it's something we overlook a lot. A lot of times we can, you know, we understand the results of the decision. Okay, we're going to improve profitability, at least temporarily. And then, you know, the resources, yeah, we can garner some resources because we can do an analysis on that. Here's what we're going to put on it. Here's what we're going to get out of it. And then sometimes we forget, well, somebody might react to that decision. And what's that reaction going to look like? You know, so we put it in place and what's going to happen. So I think that's really helpful. And so I wanted to just remind us so we could write it down and make sure we kind of get it stuck on our forehead in dark ink. So thank you for that. What's the role of a data culture in, you know, actionable insights? So, you know, how do we marry our culture with, you know, that forward-looking piece that you're talking about?
Yeah, great question, Steve. This is, in fact, research by Gartner and all the McKinsey and all those people say that to get value of out of data and analytics, you need to focus on your culture and literacy and everything. So even in my training programs, when I talk to my clients and prospects, they all have this main question: how do we build this culture of data and analytics in our company? I tell them the first thing is, do you believe in measurement and performance improvement? So data analytics is all about measuring something and improving based on that measurement and performance improvement rather. So if you don't believe in this, then it's going to be very difficult. Even if I give you a most accurate and a stunning dashboard, I will not be able to go very far with this. So the first thing which I tell them is continuous performance improvement or with measurement. So that's the first thing which you need to build a culture. The next number two is about service mentality. You need an as mentality to serve your stakeholders. So if you don't have that kind of mentality, so it's going to be very difficult. So how is data related to service mentality? Because when you want to serve somebody, you need a point of reference. And that reference comes from data. Because from there, you will be talking about improvement as well. And the last one is you believe in a culture of consensus decision-making, not hierarchical. Not because I'm senior, I have this position, I'm so many years in the company, not that. You believe in skills, you believe in knowledge, you believe in insights. So you believe in a culture of making decisions based on knowledge, based on data and consensus versus hierarchical. So if these three things are missing in a company, especially the first one, which is about performance improvement and measurement, if that's missing, and of course supported with these two, then you are not going very far with those things. So what I tell my clients is, how do you build data culture? Is about these things. Number one, again, I repeat, focus on measurement and continuous performance improvement. Have a mindset to serve your customers. When I talk about customers, somebody might say in a HR, who are my customers? I don't serve my customers. Customers could be anybody whom you are serving. It could be an internal customer. For HR, it could be the employees. For a marketing person, it's very clear that he's talking about prospect and clients. But for everybody, there is somebody who takes your work, who takes your service. Treat everybody as your customer, internal or external. And lastly, focus on consensus-based decision-making culture. Bring people together and value everybody's insights and knowledge rather than power and position and titles.
Yeah. Oh, those are three great. Thank you for reviewing those with us, because I think they're really important and they're helpful. The measurement part, finance people get that completely.
Oh, absolutely.
Cooperation, and collaboration. That's something I think we're really learning to do much better than we have in the past. And then this whole consensus thinking, not just top down. I think we're all seeing value in teamwork and that. So I think those are. I think we're going in the right direction. I think your rubber stamping or putting an exclamation point on that, you know, really helps us, kind of direct our efforts and make sure that we know how to affect the culture through those things. Thanks so much, Prashant, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks again for the opportunity. It's a pleasure talking to you.
That wraps up today's CFO Talk.